This is the 800th episode of Cut the Clutter, and soon we'll have our third anniversary as well. So first of all, let me begin by thanking all of you. You are a marvelous audience. You've kept on growing. You've kept on responding. Cut the Clutter in less than 3 years, in 799 episodes, already has had a viewership of more than 20 crores in English language. Also look at the engagement. We have thousands of likes, some unlikes also, but fortunately very few. Thousands of likes which come in immediately as a video is posted. And then engagement in terms of your responses, usually averaging upwards of 1,500. So once again, thank you for all being there. For me to sustain this over 3 years and over 800 episodes without missing anything except maybe a couple when I caught dengue last year, that's because of the motivation that all of you give me. So please be there. Also, if I may tell you, just looking at the engagement and looking at your responses, this today on all digital platforms is the most decent, non-abusive medium. This is also a medium that also I get a lot of criticism, but it's all healthy criticism, raising valid questions to which I am very happy to respond. So once again, thank you all for being there. I'm grateful to all of you. You might ask me, why are we not doing anything very special today for the 800? We will do something between episodes, maybe over the weekend or something. It's something sort of brewing in my mind. I will do like a celebration of 800, but not today because too much news is happening in the country. Now, before I get to news, we'll talk about 2.5 things today. One, we'll talk about further developments on Pegasus scandal, not in India, but actually in Israel. That we'll talk about very briefly by way of an update and by way of something that may not be reported sufficiently in India, because that is a major step forward as far as the controversy is concerned. Second, I will talk in some detail about something that a lot of you have been asking about. That is the high prevalence of COVID positivity in the state of Kerala, which otherwise was celebrated for its Kerala model and the success. So we'll put that in perspective, looking at data. And third, in the passing, I will tell you some Olympic stories because many of you have been asking me, and this is the Olympic season. So first of all, before I begin, let me also explain something to you. We have two schemes going right now. One is subscriptions to the print. Those are paid subscriptions to the print.in, which brings you the entire package of our services, facilities, our special offers and perks, including the 6 newsletters that we do, etc., and also the opportunity to feature in your term. The second is the membership plan for YouTube. We are building a YouTube community. So the subscriptions to the print.in begin at 500 rupees per month. In the course of time, as I keep telling you, maybe on our third anniversary, which will be the 20th, we will have a very special plan for students, so special that you won't be able to believe it. It is something that's coming up. Our membership plan for the YouTube community is 159 a month. And that is where you have your own perks. And many of you have joined that membership. I welcome you all, I thank you all, and I also promise that all our regular subscribers will get all the perks that YouTube members are getting, because our regular subscribers are paying more in any case. So these are two different things. Ideally, I would like to subscribe you at both levels. Thank you very much, because that is what keeps good journalism going. So please hit that subscribe button and subscribe, and also on YouTube, hit that join button and join, because we need you. The print needs you. That done, now let's look at what's happened in Israel today. Now, in India, the government has decided that they will brazen out this entire Pegasus controversy. Deniability, we did nothing, we have no idea. And remember, when they deny, they are very careful. They say that nothing unauthorized was done. So they are not saying any unauthorized monitoring using Pegasus was carried out. They are not saying we haven't used Pegasus. So they are hoping that public opinion will ignore it. This will slowly sort of wash through the system and be forgotten. And that is something that Shashi Tharoor said to my colleague Fatima Khan also in an interview that when people have so many other problems in the country, it's very difficult to get them to focus on Pegasus. So in India, they are holding out like that. Opposition is holding parliament to ransom over this, and they are hoping that they'll be able to embarrass the government. So that tamasha is going on in India. But other governments are responding much more angrily to this. And no government has been angrier about this than the French government. Because the French government has discovered that several people in France were being surveilled using this software by Moroccans. Moroccans are like a former colony. They were a protectorate of France for a long time. Part of Morocco was also under Spanish occupation, but they were a protectorate of France for a very long time. So there are a lot of interests, a lot of Moroccan dissidents are in France, and also there are very close connections. So among those being surveilled, it seems, was French President Emmanuel Macron. That now, you know, a small country, a former colony, putting the phone of the president of a P5 country under surveillance. P5, G7, France is one of the big countries, powerful countries in the world. That has riled up the French greatly. In response to this, the Israeli defense minister is in Paris. He's been in Paris, Benny Gantz. Benny Gantz is a substantive politician. We've spoken about him in our episodes on Israeli politics. He's a former chief of Israeli armed forces, a general, the topmost general, who's now the defense minister. So he's been in Paris explaining, and he's being asked these questions, and he's explaining this to the French defense minister, his French counterpart, Florence Parly. But as he met Florence Parly this morning, the same day, several sets of Israeli authorities, including Israeli Ministry of Defense, they raided the headquarters of NSO. NSO is the company that makes Pegasus software. Now, if you read different publications, some say a raid, some say visits. Some also say, Haaretz, for example, also says that before they went to NSO, they had informed NSO that they were coming in. So it was not like somebody went and rang the bell and says, aap kaun hote ho, main aapko raid karne wala hu. Not like that. But for the Israelis to do this to a company that produces super secret sensitive equipment that is sold only to other countries, sovereign countries, after government clearance, on government license, is a very major development. And Israeli Defense Ministry has said that their purpose is now to find out if all the claims that have been made by the media about surveillance of journalists, civil society activists, other heads of states, if that is true, then they will take action, because they say that this is sensitive technology. It can only be exported from Israel under license, and that license allows NSO to only sell Pegasus to be used to curb terrorism or organized crime. It is not to be used for anything else. So that has now escalated things in Israel. The big difference in Israel is that this is not the Netanyahu government, because Netanyahu government was a strongman government. He did whatever he wanted. Now, I'm not saying that these Israeli leaders are particularly liberal or bleeding hearts. They are not any of that. But the fact is, today it is not a one man or one strongman government. There are many pulls and pressures. There are many voices. Plus, none of these people likes Netanyahu. They've only come together because they all share, they have many ideological differences. But there is only one thing they agree on. They all detest Netanyahu. So that's why this is also their way of exposing Netanyahu or his indiscretions, as they might be. Now, Gantz apparently, again, if I read a story in Le Monde, I will share some of these with you. In Le Monde, Gantz has been quoted as having told his French counterpart that NSO actions are in violation of licensing regulations. Haaretz also has an editorial that says Israel owes France an explanation. Now, we know India has not asked for any such explanation, but ultimately that will not matter, because if the French push it and the Americans push it and the others push it, then the impact will be that Israel will have no choice but to crack down on NSO and do something about the sale and licensing of Pegasus. Having noted this, we also have to note that Novalpina, the company that had acquired NSO, that has also been dissolved. Not because of this, that's been dissolved because of other problems in London. But that's a different story. It just so happened coincidentally, so I thought I'll mention it to you. NSO, on the other hand, is having further trouble because Haaretz also reports that Amazon has now suspended its AWS services to NSO. And Google seems to be on its way to doing that. Le Monde also has a story saying that Pegasus has been sold to friendly dictators by Mossad. It's now becoming a very major embarrassment internationally for Israel. And in a way, it suits the current government of Israel, because once again, they make the point that Netanyahu, because of his dictatorial methods, had taken Israel in a direction where it probably did not want to go. Now we come to the hot button issue of today, which is Kerala. If you look at social media, I think this morning I saw, when I woke up, I saw on Twitter a trend. The top trend was hashtag failed Kerala model. I think I saw some 54,000 or 58,000 tweets. These are all motivated trends, obviously, because now everybody has cracked social media now. Sure enough, there have been some trends saying fantastic Kerala model, why nothing's gone wrong in Kerala. So what is the truth about Kerala? I've also got a lot of mail from you, many of you saying, please explain what is happening in Kerala. And some people say, please explain what's happening in Kerala, simple. And some people say, why are you avoiding talking about the COVID disaster in Kerala? Especially because in the past, everybody was praising the Kerala model. So here is what data tells us. If you see last week of June was when the second wave was generally declining in the country, because second wave began sort of early April, peaked in May, began declining in June. Last week of June, the second wave was declining. It hasn't gone away. In fact, there is a story by my colleague Avanti Ghosh today on the print that you should read that says that for the past 37 days, India's COVID positivity rate has plateaued, and that's not good news. That means it's not declining. The fact is, until the end of June, it was declining. Until the first week of July also, it was declining. So last week of June, Kerala's numbers were 11,000 positive cases in a day. Today, they are almost twice as much. When they are twice as much, India's total cases are just about 40,000. So Kerala's cases now account for half of all of India's cases. That looks very ugly. So when the second wave was rising in India, April 15, it began in April, I said. Then on April 15, India's total number was 2.17 lakhs. On that day, Kerala was 8,126. That is only 4% of the national average. On the day India hit its worst peak, that is 4,14,000 on May 6, after which it began to decline slowly, Kerala was 42,464. That is about 10% of the national average. Today, when India has settled at a plateau, or at a plateau after a trough, now we might say that this is not good enough, that this is plateaued and not declining. But the fact is, India is at a manageable plateau. At that point, why is Kerala half of all of India's cases? So Kerala critics would say that is because Kerala has exaggerated its success. Kerala's success was always fake. It was built on propaganda. It is nonsensical. Otherwise, why are these cases going up in Kerala when they are not going up anywhere else in the country? Only maybe some states of the Northeast and Kerala. So what happened to the famed Kerala model? That's why that trend, the failed Kerala, hashtag failed Kerala model. Also, critics now point out, and I see many tweets, I see from B.L. Santosh, who is a key person in the BJP hierarchy. Also, I see from Amit Malviya, who heads the social media for the BJP, all attacking Kerala for this. And they are pointing out, and quite rightly, factually, they are saying this, that Kerala's numbers are now high. India's positivity rate overall is about 2.5%, whereas Kerala's positivity rate overall is about 12%. That is almost six times of India's positivity rate. And not just that, if you compare with other peers, other states which have the higher positivity rate, Kerala is way ahead of them. Kerala is 12%, Maharashtra is 3.9, the second highest, Andhra Pradesh is 2.7, and that despite the fact that Kerala is conducting a very large number of tests. Usually, the larger the number of tests you conduct, the lower will be your test positivity rate. But Kerala is now conducting the highest number of tests for a state, for a full-fledged state, per million people or per lakh people, and yet is getting this high positivity. In fact, on the 27th of July, Kerala's positivity rate was 12.35%. It's a lot. And that is the day that BJP critics of Kerala pointed out that 4,000 new cases had come up only in the Malappuram district, which is a Muslim, large Muslim majority district. And the implication was straightforward, that this happened because Kerala government was irresponsible in lifting the COVID restrictions almost fully for Eid. And that is something for which Kerala government was criticized by Supreme Court as well. So obviously that has contributed to this rising cases, and that definitely was an irresponsible act by Kerala government. And it can't just be that Kumbh spreads the virus or maybe Kanwadiyas spread the virus, but Eid doesn't spread the virus, or something else, some other festival from some other religion doesn't spread the virus. This virus is secular, we've said 10 times. This virus loves religion. It doesn't respect anybody's God, but it loves religion. So anybody who says, oh, this virus will not spread through my religious federations, but will spread through other people's religious federations, is either disrespecting their religion or the virus, or both, and the virus loves that environment. So Kerala is paying for this as well. At the same time, facts tell us a different story, because there are always two sides to a coin. So Kerala's facts are not just the full numbers of Kerala, the positivity numbers of Kerala. Those I shared with you, those are very high in Kerala. And it is in spite of the fact that Kerala's overall testing is about twice as high as our national average. So it is very healthy, Kerala's testing rate. In fact, if you want to check the testing rate, our national average is 33,174 per lakh, or 331,700 per million. You can choose whatever measure you prefer. Whereas Kerala is 76,110, so that is twice as much per lakh or per million as of India. And yet Kerala has high positivity rate. Now Maharashtra has about 39,000 tests per lakh. I told you Kerala is 76,000. UP has only 28,783. That is almost a third of Kerala. Yet confirmed cases per lakh of population nationally is 2,400. For Kerala is 9,500. So if you look at these figures, Kerala looks really bad. So now let us flip the coin and look at the other side of the figures. So the biggest figure, the most important figure there, is the zero positivity rate. The National Zero Positivity Survey has just come out. That National Zero Positivity Survey tells you that all of India has a positivity rate of 68%. That means more than two-thirds of all of the Indians have antibodies. One-third of Indians are still susceptible to COVID. In case of Kerala, Kerala is the lowest among our major states. In case of Kerala, that seropositivity is only 44%. That is very low. And if you want to make a comparison with other states, who's the worst? Worst means who has the highest seropositivity rate? It is Madhya Pradesh. Madhya Pradesh has 79%, Rajasthan has 76%, Bihar has 75%, and then on the lower side, there is Maharashtra at 58, again very important, and Assam at 50. Kerala is at 44, so much lower. So whereas all over India, about one-third people still remain, one in three still remain susceptible to coronavirus, in Kerala, more than one out of two remain susceptible to coronavirus. So maybe you say that if you have 20 people in Kerala, then 11 remain susceptible to coronavirus. Whereas all over India, if you have 20 people, 6 remain susceptible to coronavirus. So when you have more people who are not seropositive, chances are that more people will come up with fresh infections. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? On paper, it looks a bad thing. But if you again dice this data scientifically, then what this also implies is that Kerala, because of its containment strategies, because of its better tracking, testing, scientific testing, targeted testing, and also contact tracing, isolation, has been able to catch more cases. That is debatable. But also that because Kerala has been doing that and taking early precautions, Kerala has never allowed its peak to go up as the national peak went up. That is the reason that when the national peak is going up like this in the months of April and May, Kerala is going a bit like this. Today, national peak is somewhere here and Kerala is a half of that. So Kerala has kept the same plateau, has kept much closer to the same plateau. So in a way, the other way of looking at this data, particularly if you apply the test of seropositivity, it looks like Kerala has been able to flatten the curve. It's not been able to bend and destroy the curve or bring it to the bottom, but it's been able to flatten the curve and keep it generally flatter and has avoided this big spike of April and May, which overwhelmed our hospital systems elsewhere in the country, caused massive deaths and destruction and shortage of oxygen and all that crisis. In the process, also gave seropositivity to a lot of the population. So just as the virus washed through large populations in the other states, particularly the Hindi heartland, Kerala, because it managed the spread better, avoided that calamity. At the same time, because it avoided that calamity, fear of its people are seropositive now, so it is still more distant from herd immunity than the other states. Similarly, you might say numbers are still going up in Maharashtra. That's another state where numbers are going up. That could also be because Maharashtra kept its seropositivity rate low, and Maharashtra was particularly in the city of Bombay, which is a very large city, big population. They were able to use containment strategies to keep their peaks still limited, still not at the same level as they went in Delhi, in the Hindi heartland, and many other states. And similarly, Assam. Assam is a BJP-run state. But Assam also has used very tough containment strategies, and it is possible that they've also been able to get their graph to flatten faster. That's why only 50% of the Assamese were found to be seropositive. So these are key data which gives you both sides of the picture on Kerala. So when you put it all this data, you draw two lines at the bottom and you also come with an answer. So the answer, what is the answer? You should see what is the fatality rate, the death rate in Kerala. The death rate in Kerala is 0.5 per 100 cases. That is about one third of the national average of 1.34, even if you go by the official data on the deaths, which is being questioned now. But Kerala is one third. Say Punjab, for example, is almost six times as high as Kerala. Why did that happen? One reason that happened is that because Kerala was able to contain its rise and let that rise go on steadily but not go to a peak, its hospital and public health system did not collapse. It also has a better public health system, but it did not collapse. Even today, when Kerala accounts for one third of all of India's active cases. Our active cases are just over 4 lakhs. Kerala's active cases are nearly 1,35,000. Even then, in Kerala, only 27,000 people are in hospitals. And Kerala's hospitals can handle it. And that's why Kerala was able to keep its fatality rate low. So these are different ways of understanding the same problem. The rest, of course, people make up their minds depending on their politics or which side they are on. It is not our job to do that. I am giving you facts from both sides and data as they tell us the story. You draw the conclusions. And finally, the Olympic stories. First of all, some good news has come from the Olympics. I saw the match that Deepika Kumari played, very tough match against the American. And I realized how thrilling archery can be. And you need the nerves not of steel, but you need the nerves of titanium to be able to play there. Because ultimately, it is a difference of just one. So she hit one perfect 10 in the final set, and that kept her 1 point above, and she won. So watch a lot of excitement. India beat Argentina 3-1 in hockey and has ensured a place in quarterfinals. Hopefully, it will beat Japan also. So, we'll get a weaker rival at the other end. But I also want to tell you that the Olympic level, nobody is weaker because only 12 teams in the world go to play, say, a game like hockey. Only 12. Competition is so tough that qualification itself is an achievement. Pakistan, mind you, has not qualified for the Olympics. So Pakistan is not there. Otherwise, we see Pakistan as a Dada team. It's not there. India beat Argentina. Remember, Argentina won Rio Olympics last year. So Argentina is the reigning Olympic champion. India has beaten them now. But remember, even last Olympics at Rio, India had beaten Argentina at the league stage. But India lost the quarterfinals. Argentina went on to win the gold. So again, it makes the same point that among the 12 who are competing there, there isn't that much to choose. And if your team has 3 victories already, that is against Spain, New Zealand and Argentina, they've beaten 3 of the world's best teams. So feel good about it. PV Sandhu's progressing. That is good stuff. So I should not be talking too much negative stuff because you people ask me for stories and controversies. Stories usually on the Olympic Games or Olympic sports in India are of controversy. So I will tell you about 1990 Asian Games in Beijing, which I went to cover for India Today magazine along with photographer Bhavan Singh. Terrible disasters happened in those Asian Games. I'll share the 2 stories I did on those games with you. One on the games where I said that it was so embarrassing to have the Indian dog tag because people would look at the fact that you were from India and they will laugh at you. They'll make fun of you because India did so badly. India won only 1 gold medal in that Asian Games. Asian Games would do much better than that. And that 1 gold was also only in Kabaddi. So taxi drivers will also make fun of you by saying, Indo, very good, Kabaddi, like that, but with a smirk. But the standout story of that Asian Games was that India fielded not 1 but 2 Indian Olympic associations. One headed by V.C. Shukla, the politician, one headed by Shivanti Adityan, the businessman from Chennai. And each one claimed to be the genuine Indian Olympic Association. So can you imagine the embarrassment of being an Indian supporter, an Indian journalist, when you had 2 Indian Olympic Associations? Because Pakistanis teased us by saying, "Agli baar toh ji, aap 2 hockey team leke aa jana." That Asia, we also did very poorly against Pakistan in the final. We lost by a tennis score, unfortunately. But it was that embarrassing. And the peak of that shame was that one morning in our media hotel, we had little envelopes slipped under our doors, and those envelopes had invitation to a press conference by the Adityan faction of IOA or Adityan IOA. And that invitation to the press conference had 2 crisp $100 notes with it. Now, this was a mass bribing of all of the Indian touring press contingent. And it was immediately reported. Everybody wrote stories about it and everybody protested. And so V.C. Shukla held a press conference, rival IOA, saying, "What a shameful thing this is. My rival is trying to embarrass the Indian media." So that is the kind of environment through which India's Olympic sportsmen and women have to fight their way through and win. And when they win, you can be sure of the fact that they have to have extraordinary talent, because you have to fight through this maze of politics and this maze of corruption. Frankly, we keep fretting about cricket, but cricket is a much cleaner game. Whatever the problems you might have with BCCI, it's a much cleaner game, fully self-financing and actually quite prosperous, and cricketers benefit as much as the board does. That is not the story with most other sports in India.